Well, it's a huge pleasure to be here, and thank you very, very much for the welcome, Tony. I want to thank Mike and Leslie and Ian and all those who've got this service ready. It's just amazing what happens in this parish, that so many people have put in a huge amount of work. I just want to point out that I've been sending PowerPoint slides to Mike and then Adele, and Ian has put it on there. All of this is unseen. But Mike and Leslie, wherever you are, thank you very, very much. And Ian, thank you. People are already leaving, so if you want to leave, Ian, can we have the first slide up, please? Now, this is a painting by Rembrandt. It was created by him when he was about 25, still living in Leiden. And it shows one of his favourite subjects, which is Jesus in the temple being presented by Mary for the purification. And if you could, when you go home, have another look at it. It's in the Mauritshuis in The Hague, if you want to look at it in detail. Very much a young man's painting, so it's very dramatic. On the right, you probably can't quite see, but there are people pouring down the steps. And in the front here, Simeon is kneeling, Mary is kneeling next to him, and there's a figure, really sort of highly emphasized, who is, I guess, meant to represent the high priest. So that was painted when Rembrandt was 25. Could we have the next, please, Ian? The same subject, painted a year before Rembrandt died, or in the year he died, which was 1669. He was then 63. If you want to see this for real, you'll need to go to Stockholm. And I came across it once when I was there, and I had to get a chair out and sit because it was just knocked me sideways. What's so special about this? Well, we've got rid of all the trappings. No steps, no high priest, no spotlights, nothing. In his old age, Rembrandt has created this of a very, very old man. Now, let me just tell you about a tiny bit about Rembrandt's life. He had married his beloved Saskia. They had four children, three of whom died, one of whom survived, a little boy called Titus, and then Saskia herself died. Following that, Rembrandt he lived with the woman he brought in to be Titus's nurse, scandal in Amsterdam. Then he decided that she was totally unacceptable, and tried to get her to leave, and he wanted to put her in a poorhouse, and she sued him for breach of promise. Meanwhile, although he'd been very successful, he lived well beyond his means, and he was right on the very edge of bankruptcy. The only way he could stave off bankruptcy was to sell the beautiful and huge house, which was his studio and living quarters in Amsterdam, moved into a tiny house. He then took up with his housekeeper, a woman called Hendrik Stoffels, and with her he had a little daughter. So he's lost his first wife, he's had legal problems with his mistress, his third mistress come wife had a baby, he's lost three children, he's almost been bankrupt. So he's been through the mill, to put it mildly. A year before he himself died, his only son Titus died. This was painted in the same year that he himself, Rembrandt, died. And for me, it encapsulates all that chaos of his life. But it also, for me anyway, encapsulates the beauty and the sadnesses of old age. a time when you can look back with a mixture of regret and sorrow and guilt and joy and happiness, when everything that those of us who are older have been through is now past, and we're waiting to move on towards death. And what you have to hear, as it were, in this painting, is Rembrandt painting Simeon, as Simeon says, the very, very, very first time it had ever been said, "Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace, according to thy word." Could we have a close-up, Ian? Just astonishing painting. I mean, absolutely amazing. You can see every hair, every brush stroke, everything in that elderly man's face. And finally, Ian. And this was Rembrandt's final self-portrait. So for me, Rembrandt represents everything about the greatness and the sadness of all our lives. He somehow captured the mysteries of what it means to be a human being, and somehow, through paint, transformed them. So it can all go blank now, thanks Ian. And now I want to move in a different direction, and I'm going to take you into a wardrobe. This is The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, and I'm going to quote from it now. Lucy went into the wardrobe. Soon she went further and found there was a second row of coats hanging up behind the first one. It was almost quite dark in there, and she kept her arms stretched out in front of her so as not to bump her face into the back of the wardrobe. She took a step further in, then two or three steps, always expecting to feel woodwork against the tips of her fingers, but she couldn't feel it. "This must be a simply enormous wardrobe," thought Lucy, going still further in and pushing the soft folds of the coats aside. And then she noticed that there was something crunching under her feet. She felt something soft and powdery and extremely cold. And then she saw there was a light ahead of her. Not a few inches away, where the back of the wardrobe ought to have been, but a long way off. And something cold and soft was falling on her. A moment later, she found she was standing in the middle of a wood. She began to walk forwards, crunch, crunch over the snow and through the wood towards the other light. In about 10 minutes, she found she reached it, and it was a lamppost. Now, I don't know how many of you have read The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. I guess most people. And if you look in there, you'll see there's the most lovely drawing of a simple lamppost. That was created by another artist, Pauline Baines, who lived much of her life in Dockingfield. And that lamppost that she drew is virtually identical to the one that's now been moved inside the churchyard fence. It's absolutely lovely. So on the one hand, we have an artist with paint, that is Rembrandt, who's taken each of us into the mysteries of our own humanity. And we have C.S. Lewis, who is witty and intelligent and courteous and understated, who takes us to the lamppost and beyond in that story until we eventually encounter the great roar of Aslan. And Aslan is, of course, symbolic of God. So now, just on the edge of your churchyard, there is a light for those with eyes to see, which is straight from Narnia. And our prayer must be that that light will bring people gently through the doors of this lovely church and then into the arms of God's mercy. Two artists, one with paint, one with words. So what we need to pray for ourselves and for each other is that we will be taken into the knowledge of our humanity, and we should be taken with grace and humility into the light. And then, perhaps in God's time, not ours, in God's time, we shall find ways of sharing the truths of him with each other and with our neighbours as the future unfolds. A light to lighten the Gentiles and to be the glory of thy people Israel. Amen.